Good afternoon. The Senate Education Workforce Development Committee will come to order. We're going to open this committee with a public hearing on House Bill 2180. If you could give us a summary.
Certainly. House Bill 2180 requires school districts to submit written plans of instruction for talented and gifted tagged students to the superintendent of public instruction, allows the superintendent to approve a plan only if the plan is submitted as part of application for state funds, prohibits superintendent from approving plans unless the school district agrees to expend district funds for special education programs for talented and gifted children, declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2011.
Thank you. And we have Representative Tome with us along with Margaret DeLacy. Thank you both, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'm Carolyn Tome, State Representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland. With me today is Margaret DeLacy, who is my constituent, who is the chief proponent of this bill. Margaret has been working on this issue for years and is just very enthusiastic and a hard worker on this issue. She heads the Oregon Association for the Talented and Gifted and is one of those dedicated citizen advocates who is so important to the legislative process. For years now, Margaret's worked on behalf of quality education for all of our children and most especially for our talented and gifted. What we find that in the educational arena is that we don't emphasize enough our talented and gifted children who have special needs. Their learning styles are different, and the types of instructions that they need vary. We have an obligation to serve our talented and gifted students just as surely as we must serve our lower performing students. Margaret recognizes this need, and House Bill 2180 is one small step to assure quality education for our talented and gifted students. Margaret's going to tell us about the bill. Colleagues, we just got out of our House floor session. I haven't had lunch yet, so if you will excuse me, I will go on, and I know Margaret will tell you a lot more than I know about the bill, and we have other people here to testify. So may I be excused?
Thank you. The next time this happens, let us know. We'll have a boxed lunch. So.
Okay, thank you. I will be there. Great. Thank you so much.
Representative Tome.
Chair Hash and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Margaret DeLacy. I live in Portland, and I am here on behalf of the Oregon Association for Talented and Gifted. I would like to make one small correction. I am not the head of the Oregon Association. That honor belongs to Stephen Price. I am a member of the Oregon, the Government Relations Committee of the association. House Bill 2180 is basically corrects a drafting error that was made when the Oregon tag mandate passed. The Oregon tag mandate became effective in 1991. I'm not quite sure offhand when it passed. I believe it was 89. The state had been in receipt of a grant, Javits grant from the federal government, and in order to spend that money, it had written a piece of legislation that enabled the Department of Education to administer the grant. In order to get some of that funding, school districts had to send a plan to the state to qualify for the grant. And then the state decided to create the tag mandate, and the grant itself disappeared. But it, when it wrote the mandate, it incorporated into it language that continued from the enabling legislation for the grant. And one of the sentences in there said that districts may send copies of their tag plans to the State Department of Education. The State Department of Education interprets this as meaning that it does not have the right to ask to see these plans, even though they're public record. I was sitting here listening to members of the department testify about 2003, I think it was, and they were talking about the work that they were doing for TAG and saying that their work was impeded because they didn't have access to these plans. It seemed like a relatively straightforward fix to allow the department to see these plans. I am here for the third session since 2005, asking you again to make this correction. At the moment, Senate Bill 330, which you were kind enough to pass for TAG a couple weeks ago, is pending in the Ways and Means Committee. That will create a TAG task force. And we're hoping that the two bills will create a synergy that the task force will actually have access to information about what districts are doing in order to come up with a plan that will do a better job of providing services for our students. So I would urge a yes vote, and I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
House vote. Thank you. And yes, we discussed this a few weeks ago, that this is one of three bills that are forming this movement.
Committee vote.
Questions? Comments? Senator Morse?
Who?
Senator George?
Margaret, I could not be a bigger supporter of talent and gifted programs. I really think that they're a vital part of our education system. But we also have a counter situation right now where we're trying to eliminate mandates on local governments and on school districts. And so if this went back to the original grant program where the state of Oregon paid to have these reports done, I'd be really supportive because we should bear the burden of mandates that we put out. The question is that it can run, it kind of runs counter to everything we're trying to do, to basically say the school districts are running the show and they need to perform to their parents, to the positive reaction of parents, and we as a legislature shouldn't necessarily be mandating things. So here, a huge supporter of talented and gifted, I'm really conflicted and not comfortable with voting for another mandate on local governments. Can you kind of give me a way out of this?
I hope so. First of all, this bill does not create any new mandates. The mandate is already in state law. The state law, when it became effective in 1991, required every school district to have a plan. So the only thing we are asking today is to allow the State Department of Education to see those plans and the task force. I agree with you that our ultimate feeling is that we do need funding to support these services. But it's difficult for me to come in here and defend a funding plan when I don't have any idea of what districts are doing now. We don't have access to that information. My hope would be that a task force would come up with a plan that everybody, including the districts, could agree on, and then we would be coming back to you next biennium to talk about it. But in order to do that, we need information, and this bill simply provides that information to us in a central location.
Okay. Answer your question.
Yeah.
Did she help you?
Brian.
Help you out?
See.
Other questions? Senator Bonamici?
No.
Okay, Margaret.
I would like to thank the committee very much. I'm very pleased to be here today.
Thank you. The measure did pass the House 52-5. We have it over here. Anyone else signed up or would like to speak on House Bill 2180?
Mr. Chair?
Rebecca?
Adam, oh, the department. Up. Come on up. Sorry.
Thank you.
We didn't have you signed up.
Okay. Chair Haas, members of the committee, thanks for allowing us to come in front of you today. In front of you in just a moment, you'll have a handout with the latest and greatest TAG data out of the Oregon statewide report card. This is from the 2009-2010 school year. This contains some facts and figures about how many TAG students we are serving throughout the state. And with me today, I have Rebecca Blocker, who, among other things, is our TAG specialist at the Department of Education, and she is here to share some more information with you about this bill.
For the record, my name is Rebecca Blocker, and I'm the education specialist in the Oregon Department of Education. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. Chair Haas and members of the committee, it is my pleasure to provide some insights into the talented and gifted information that you have before you. First of all, This outlines on the first page, on page 78, the categories for identification of talented and gifted students. Students may qualify in more than one category, but as you can see from the information on page 78, we actually have about 42,065 students who are identified as talented and gifted in the state of Oregon. In addition to that, there's a ethnic and racial profile which is provided, and following that is, I think it's actually encouraging information about our student dropout rate, which is 0.5% of identified talented and gifted students. That's well, well, well below the national average of all dropouts, and it's a significant, it provides a significant link to the fact that if students are identified, they are generally encouraged to stay in school because that provides their instruction and their educational program a lot more meaning for them. I would like to, and I'd be happy to answer questions if there are any questions about that data sheet. In addition to that, the most important thing I wanted to share with you today is the Oregon Department of Education supports House Bill 2180 because it will do the following things to enlighten and help and assist talented and gifted education in the state of Oregon. The first part is that this would require districts to thoughtfully document specialized educational programming which talented and gifted students are guaranteed through the law and statute in the state of Oregon. In addition to that, it would assist districts in defining what they should provide to the categories of identified students. And those would be those students who are identified as intellectually gifted, those students who have unusual academic ability, students we in general pick up on the Oaks reading test or the Oaks mathematics test, and then students who are in those optional categories for identification such as creativity, leadership, and visual and performing arts, although you do see that that's a real low area for identification right now. And then the other category, which is left for districts to define at the local level, and that would be the potential to perform for students who show great promise in being identified as talented and gifted. And then finally, there are two other things that are broader in scope, and that would mean that the bill would provide a mechanism to ensure that talented and gifted educational programs have some continuity from one district to another, given our highly mobile populations. And then finally, this would really work so well for parents because it would provide parents a minimum level of expectation about what talented and gifted programming might look like at the district level. And the mechanism portion of this is incredibly important. I would like to go back to Senator George's comment, Chair Haas, Senator George. This is the requirement to have a talented and gifted education plan is already in place. So that's, and so this is really a one-word change that changes this from districts may submit this to districts shall submit this. And in the shall part of this, I think this provides a reporting mechanism. So the plan is already in place, and this provides a reporting mechanism. And since districts probably should have this in place, and it's outlined in broad topics in the ORS for Talented and Gifted Education, I think that we could be hopeful that districts would have already have this on hand, and then we're talking about an electronic submission or a postage to mail it to the Department of Education. So I would be happy to answer any questions which the committee may have. And thank you for the opportunity to talk.
Thank you. Questions? I'm struck by your demographic table in the bottom section there. It's got economically disadvantaged. 23% of TAG students fall into that category, which is, I think, a good thing. But I'm struck that, are you saying that 50.1% of all students fall into the category of economically disadvantaged?
These are students in the, this is broken down into all demographic information and then those students who are talented and gifted. And so the question you're referring to is?
The very?
Percent of all students in the state of
right.
Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So half of our students in Oregon, I know this is off topic here, but you're saying that half of our students are in the category of economically disadvantaged?
This is the data that is in the Oregon State report card, so I actually am not, that category appears here just for clarification purposes.
I realize it's off topic and I'm getting some head nodding. And I'm struck by that when I go to schools in Beaverton, you know, affluent Beaverton, where many of the schools are 60-70% reduced lunch program. And I think a big disconnect we have in this state is that a lot of people don't see the reality that is half of our students fall into that category.
Statewide, yes.
Statewide. And if we don't do more than what we're doing, that there's a whole lot of kids who are either A, not going to get through our school system, and the outcome isn't good there, or B, they need some help once they do get through, because the outcome isn't particularly great there. So I don't mean to digress onto something else, but I've never really seen it documented like this that you have in this category. So, no further questions or comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to close public hearing on House Bill 2180, and I'm going to open up a public work session on House Bill 2180.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2180 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Morris moves House Bill 2180 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the measure passes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We're up at the other end. Senator Bonamici, would you like to carry this bill?
As a sponsor of the bill, I'd very much like to.
I think so. Close the work session on House Bill 2180. And let us go into a work session on 3106 and open up a work session on House Bill 3106. This one is ready to go except for some clarification paperwork that we have for some of the members.
Senator Morris.
Included.
Let's see.
And I think we do have some people who are on standby to testify if need be.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Shields?
I'm curious, do we, since we listed it as a public hearing and possible work session, are you required to have a public hearing on this bill? Just wanted to make sure the T's are crossed.
We'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3106. Thank you. Good catch.
Well, we had, Mr. Chair, one question was how many students access expanded options, how many at-risk students access these options, and we do have that data in the material that's before.
Linda, I think you all got it.
Sure.
Go ahead and explain it. There should be a note there from John.
Yes, on this House bill, it talked about participation in expanded options program, and when the committee looked over the fiscal statement, the analysis, there were questions of things that the folks in the legislative fiscal office, they had two things they felt were unclear. In one place, it said that the program must ensure that at-risk students participate in the program, and he wanted to have us discuss whether just notification that's already in the law was sufficient to ensure. And the second part was that it talked about at-risk students were not required to make any payments for participation, and he said by any payments, does that mean that we're expanding the scope of what the responsibility of the school district is? Would it include laptops and so on? Some of the explanations that I'm sure you received and the other members received, the amounts are already in, or the things that are covered are already in the law, In Section 1, it says provide public funding to the eligible post-secondary institutes for educational services to offset the cost of tuition, fees, textbooks, equipment, and materials. So it is not an expansion of those items that have already been covered in the past. And the must ensure, there are the purpose of this bill and the new language that was added into Section 1, it just says it gives it a new purpose to increase the number of at-risk students earning college credits. So it didn't expand, I mean, it does expand the purpose, but it doesn't say you have to ensure that they get into the programs, notify them, and try to encourage them. So it's not a mandate that they have to go into it.
Okay.
Those seem to be the key questions that came out of that fiscal office concern.
Is the sense that the bill is okay to go?
Yes, sir. It's ready if
okay.
Necessary paperwork is here. Is there anyone who does want to testify on this? We are in a work session.
Public hearing. We're public back into work session.
Work session before that.
Mm-hmm.
Morris, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's go. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3106 to the floor, as amended, to the floor. Well, no, back up. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3106-A to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3106 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3106 goes to the floor of the State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Senator George, would you like to carry this?
Sure. Close public hearing and work session on House Bill 3106. Open up a public hearing on House Bill 2353. Linda?
Okay, 2353. Changes the name of the program from Oregon Career Readiness Certification Program to the Oregon National Career Readiness Certification Program, NCRC. It clarifies the requirements for obtaining services from NCRC. It expands NCRC services to provide assessments, instruction, remedial training, and to inform school districts, community colleges, and community college service districts about the program. Requires community colleges and districts to report student use, participation, enrollment rate to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. Declares an emergency effective on passage. There has been an amendment submitted, which is Amendment A-4. This amendment removes the education service districts from those entities to be informed about the National Career Readiness Certification Program.
Thank you. Is there anyone wishing to testify on this bill today? No, then I will close public hearing on House Bill 2353, and I will open up a work session on House Bill 2353.
Mr. Chair, I move the -4 A4 amendment to House Bill 2353, dated 4/28/11.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 23-4 amendment to 2353, dated April 28, 2011. Is there any discussion? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. I just wonder if somebody wants to talk about the policy reason for removing the
service districts. Yes, I talked to the sponsor, Representative Dembro, about this, and it was thought that because of the proposed changes in ESD bills throughout the building, that would make the most sense and be least problematic down the road. Okay. Were this to pass and were those to pass. He nods. Other discussion? Objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2353A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morse moves House Bill 2353A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Seeing none, House Bill 2353A goes to the State Senate floor with a do pass recommendation. I will carry that bill. Moving on down the row here. I'd like to open up a public hearing on House Bill 3521.
House Bill 3521 requires the Joint Board of Education to develop standards by which students may apply credits earned at community college toward a baccalaureate degree awarded by the state institutions of higher learning. Requires Joint Boards of Education to submit a report of standards to the interim legislative committees related to education no later than November 1st, 2012. Declares an emergency effective on passage.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Dembro is here, sponsoring two bills in a row before our committee. A streak going.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I promise I will only bring you good bills. This is another of those. I'm State Representative Michael Dembro. I represent District 45. That's Northeast Portland to Park Rose. And 3521 is a bill, another bill that came out of the Higher Ed Committee, subcommittee on the House side, that is part of, I think, our shared agenda of expanding access to higher education and success for more Oregonians. What this bill does is it creates Oregon's first ever transfer student bill of rights and responsibilities. It initiates a process to create that bill of rights. You know, it used to be that most students would start higher ed at one school, and 4 years later, they would, if they were successful, they would finish and get a bachelor's degree, and everyone was happy. Today, it's actually becoming increasingly rare for students to get all of their credits at the same school where they started. More and more students are starting to accumulate credits in high school, and you know we're all engaged in an effort to actually make that even easier. Students in the OUS system, more than half of the students who graduate from an Oregon university now will have started at a community college. And increasingly, students are co-enrolled at different institutions, bringing together classes that they're taking online at one institution with classes they're taking face-to-face at another, and maybe even a third at the same time. And this is all very good. It's helping to make higher education somewhat affordable for Oregon students and their families. It's expanding access to people who live in the more rural parts of the state. It's helping working Oregonians to get onto and stay on career ladders as they increase their education and skills. But for such a system to work, it's really crucial that you have a well-functioning transfer and articulation system, or else people are going to fall through the cracks, they're going to lose credits, and they're going to lose money as a result. Here in Oregon, as you know, we have 17 community colleges, we have 7 public universities, and each of them has separate transfer and articulation agreements with the other. And it's, you know, these, for the most part, I think are functioning well, but it does lead to a great deal of confusion and, in many cases, people falling through the cracks. What we need in this state, and that's what this bill is all about, is for Oregon students and their families to feel confident that they can start their education at a community college, finish at a university and get that bachelor's without wasting time and wasting dollars, wasting credits. So we are hearing from national experts in the college completion movement that states need to get serious about transfer and articulation. And the first step should be that legislatures should create mechanisms like this Bill of Rights and Responsibilities, where people from the community colleges get together with people from the universities and clarify their practices and give Oregonians that level of certainty. And that's what this bill does. It came to us initially from the community colleges, and the university system is fully in support of it, and we're very encouraged by their willingness to work together on it. This is a good bill. It's going to help us meet that 40-40-20 goal so that people don't start college and then find themselves without a degree or certification. And so on behalf of the Higher Ed Subcommittee, the Education Committee, and the entirety of the House, I would urge you to support this bill.
Thank
and
you.
I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to remember. The history of this goes back. I remember this occurring with legislation previously. Could you reflect on that if you do recall, and why that hasn't implemented into a workable articulation agreement, and why we're now at this point of having to do it again?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be happy to, Senator Morse through, and Senator Haas. And I think there may be others after me that can speak more cogently to this. The two systems did get together and create an Oregon transfer degree, an Associates of Oregon transfer, and that was a really good start. And it is overseen by the joint boards of education, where the State Board of Education, State Board of Higher Education periodically meet and work on these issues of common concern. In my understanding, it's that the work happens in fits and starts, and there is not a steady, consistent, you know, articulated process of articulation, and this would help to get us there. I believe that here's a little editorial comment, that with the passage of Senate Bill 242 and the creation of the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission, that's going to really increase the functioning of this process. Joint boards meet, but they're not a single entity in the same way that the Higher Education Commission will be, and I think it will really help us to move forward. One component that I didn't talk about, and I think others will, that is really important, is that with changes to our data systems, it's going to be easier to track students as they move from high school to community college to university. And the hope is that the entities will be able to put together a system where it will become almost automatic, that when a student has accumulated enough credits for an associate's degree in the correct areas, they will be able to bypass all the bureaucracy of, you know, applying for a degree and going through all those hoops. Even if they have already transferred to the university, they will be able to wrap back some of the credits that they have gotten in the university to get that associate's degree. Because one thing we found, when we found this in the higher ed study group, work group, was that there are a number of students who their intention is to get a bachelor's degree. They transfer from the college without getting an associate's degree, and their assumption was that within 2 years they'd have a bachelor's degree. Well, 2 years comes and goes. Life happens. It's 3 years. It's 4 years. And they find themselves without a bachelor's degree and also without an associate's degree. And they find themselves without the certification and, you know, of course, the the self-enhancement that having a degree will give them. So this will all help us to take transfer and articulation into the 21st century, as it were.
Thank you. And a follow-up?
Thank you. Yes, Senator Morse.
One of the big issues I'm beginning to recall now more about this discussion is the content of courses being similar across the board, And I don't see that that's addressed in the bill. Is that an issue that would be of concern in developing these?
Certainly it will be part of the conversations, Senator. And you know, the things have shifted really in the last decade or so, where, you know, 10 years ago there was a lot of talk about content. Now the talk is more about outcomes. And so, you know, even if the content may be a little different in the courses, but the goal is that when students leave the courses, they have, you know, an identical set of competencies and abilities. But that's something that people from, you know, faculty working in the colleges, working in the universities, need to be talking about with others in their disciplines constantly. And I will say that the challenge is not just between the community college and the university. Often it's university to university, where there's a lot of disparity and where people have to come to a level of trust with one another, where they feel confident that students are getting what they need in their colleagues' courses.
Other questions or comments? Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much, Representative Denbrough. I really could have used this years ago as someone who started at community college. The only downside that I see is that I don't think students will get as much experience in negotiation, trying to talk their way in to let their community college credits count at a university. But I think this is a great bill, and thank you for bringing it.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bridget Burns from OUS, did you want to testify? Cam? John.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. For the record, my name is Bridget Burns with the Oregon University System, and we're just here to briefly speak in support of the legislation before you today. We firmly agree with the principles behind the legislation because it's very focused on access, on being student-focused, and making our systems even more seamless than they are now. Of course, it places a responsibility on the community colleges and Oregon University System, but we believe it is an extension of our previous work, which Senator Morris alluded to in achieving the articulation agreements, the dual credit arrangements that we have, and how seamlessly we can currently do financial aid between community colleges and OUS. So this is just building on the momentum that we have already developed. We consider our close relationship with the community colleges and the high schools to be a tremendous source of pride, and we think that this is something that we're very committed toward. And as Representative Denbrough spoke, this is very much in line with achieving the goals of the 40-40-20, because at the Oregon University System, we believe that students, no matter where they sit right now, are someday going to be our students. So they might be a current high school student or a community college student, and we know that someday it's our job to get them through, give them a bachelor's degree, and make it so that they can attain all their goals. So we're interested in helping them wherever they're at. We think that some of the most important parts of this legislation are, first, it provides a framework for the Joint Boards Articulation Committee, Commission, the Unified Education Enterprise, and the Joint Boards Working Group, and that's going to be helpful. Further, the annual report is going to be very helpful for us because it will allow for more data-driven decisions rather than anecdotal, because right now a lot of the time what we hear are anecdotes about people's experiences, and this is going to give us a lot more tools because we'll have some data that we can point to so that when we make decisions about transfer and degrees, that this will give us the necessary information that we think will advance that goal. Further, we think that the fact that there is a student responsibility, we think that's important because it is on the student to be able to be proactive, but at the same time, we're going to be providing them with the steps necessary to achieve all that they have in their future. So we just support this based on its principles, based on the work that has gone into it and the work in front of it. So thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. John?
Chair House, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Wyckoff. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Community College Association. And we are also here in strong support of House Bill 3521 and would really like to thank Representative Denbrough for his for work on this bill and for working with us on it. I think Ultimately, what this bill is intended to do is to create better efficiency for the student and for the state both, so that we're not having to have students repeat courses as they articulate from a college to a university or a college to a college, and so the state also isn't having to also subsidize those courses. So I think it provides some efficiency. And the real issue here is getting at the front end so that the student knows both when they start their degree program, whether that's an associate Oregon transfer program with the idea of moving on to a four-year degree, that they know what they have to do and that when they transfer on to the next step, that they know where they are and what status they are, and that that has been guaranteed to them, that if they completed the transfer degree and that's a two-year transfer degree, then they're guaranteed junior status at a university. And by junior status, that means you only have two more years to go, that it doesn't just mean you've attained that many credits to get to junior status, but that you actually only need two more years worth of credits because all of your credits have transferred. And so it's really doing that work all at the front end for the student. Now, I'm just going to walk really quickly through what we see as kind of the major elements of what this does and where it takes us beyond, I think, the work that was originally done that Senator Morris had gotten to that created the Associate of Arts of Transfer Degree. These, I think, are the steps that go beyond that. And one is it guarantees for the students what the maximum credits that I was getting to earlier, the maximum credits that they will need to finish their baccalaureate degree after transferring in with an AAOT or the Oregon Transfer Module, which is a one-year transfer degree. And it gets them at the front end what are the maximum credits they need prior to transferring. So what do they? We want to make sure they know what they need to do prior to transferring. The next thing that I think on the reporting piece that that we see, and we agree with the university system on this, because the reporting piece will give us a lot of information about where students are transferring, whether students are starting at a community college and transferring over, and we'll just have a more complete picture of that. The average number of credits that students are looking at are transferring with. And it also includes, to get back to a question asked by Senator Morris, a review of the standards for the Associate Oregon Transfer that I think should address issues of whether you're transferring courses in those modules that are equivalent. And so hopefully in that process that would be addressed. And so those are the major elements. And again, I think from our perspective, one of the most important thing this does is it creates a set of guarantees for students so that they can be as efficient as possible in moving through their degree, so that they aren't having to retake courses and spend more time and money on their education than absolutely necessary. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you both. Emma Calloway.
Hello, everyone. For the record, my name is Emma Calloway. I'm the Legislative Director of the Oregon Student Association. So, Chair Haas and members of the committee, I am here today to speak on behalf of Senate Bill 3521. I'm not going to read my written testimony for you. Bridget Burns and John Wyckoff have gone over a number of the key points that I wanted to highlight, but there are a couple things I did want to share with you. So one, we believe that this bill really does help a variety of categories of students. So students starting at a community college and going to a university, students transferring between universities, and we have a number of students that are at university that are either dual enrolled or have gone back to take classes at a community college because they want smaller classes or less expensive classes, and so they've gone actually back to community college. And so we believe that all of these categories are supported in this bill. One of my students asked that I share with you that at Lane Community College specifically, 51% of full-time students are taking lower division college credits as a part of their AAOT. So that's nearly 8,000 students just at Lane Community College alone that would be able to benefit from a bill like this, because they would actually be able to transfer all of those credits. And that's nearly 50,000 students statewide. So this bill is very far-reaching. It seems to be an excellent opportunity for students. And the last thing I'll share with you is in the House side, a student named Catherine Lindquist gave her testimony, and one of the things she expressed is that even if 5 of her credits don't transfer as a part of her AAOT degree to a university, that's a full term at a university, and that can be, you know, upwards of thousands of dollars. So we really believe that making sure that every student can get every credit possible from their previous institution is the very best thing for students in the state of Oregon. So for those reasons and a number of other reasons that were shared with you today, the Oregon Student Association very much supports this bill and hopes that you vote yes on 3521, and we especially want to thank Representative Dembro for his leadership on this bill and really noticing the concerns around transfer students and how important this would be for students across the state. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Questions? Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 3521? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3521 and open up a work session on House Bill 3521.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3521 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves House Bill 3521 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Discussion? I will say I think this is a good bill. I'm surprised this still isn't as consistent as we all would like it, and I think Mr. Wyckoff hit it on the head that the most important thing here is to get this information out in front of people so they know that they're not going to be surprised later on, which I know is often the case in a bad way. So
I would just express one comment.
Yes, sir.
I'm surprised that it still took a bill to get done what we set in motion previously.
Agree.
That being said, it's a good one.
Yes, and I support the bill. But
all right, further discussion? Seeing none, objections? Seeing none, House Bill 3521 is passed, moves to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. We're down to Senator Morse to carry this bill.
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's all our business today. Thank you, committee. We are adjourned.